WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Charlottesville will soon have more safety cameras in an effort to reduce gun violence and vehicle thefts. Governor Youngkin signs a bill sponsored by Harrisonburg Senator Obenchain that will increase penalties for those who manufacture pressed pills containing fentanyl. And as time runs out for the governor to sign, veto, or amend bills, Jeff Shapiro joins us to discuss the week in politics and state government. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 5th. Charlottesville police plan to place 10 cameras throughout the city in an effort to reduce gun violence and vehicle thefts. The Flock safety cameras will photograph license plates to assist law enforcement in investigations. A 12-month pilot program is planned, which could begin by the end of the summer. Charlottesville Police Chief Michael Kochus addressed City Council earlier this week.
There are jurisdictions in Virginia that have speed cameras, but they can only use them in school zones and work zones, I believe. That is different because you get a ticket in the mail and it's for traffic infractions. This is not for that.
Similar programs are in place in Harrisonburg and other cities. According to Charlottesville Council meeting documents, members focused questions on how the data would be stored, reviewed, and accessed. Kochus said quarterly updates involving feedback from the community, council, and the city's police civilian oversight board would be put in place during the pilot. The University of Virginia, on Thursday, marked the opening of its recently renovated main library. The library, built in 1937, also was renamed to honor the school's fourth president, Edgar Shannon. Lois Shannon, his daughter, thanked the board of visitors and UVA President Jim Ryan during her remarks on the windy day.
Dad showed us the importance of standing up for what we believe in and the need to work for a better and more just society.
The library was originally named after UVA's first president, Edwin Alderman, who was a supporter of eugenics. Well, Governor Glenn Youngkin has signed a bill sponsored by Harrisonburg area State Senator Mark Obenchain that will increase punishments for those who manufacture pressed pills containing fentanyl. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner reports.
Flanked by Republican legislators from the western half of the state, Governor Glenn Youngkin and Attorney General Jason Miaris ran down a list of statistics to show how bad the fentanyl crisis is in the Commonwealth. In 2022, about 7 Virginians died of an overdose every day. Youngkin warned it's not a problem Virginians can ignore.
And sometimes we become numb to those statistics because they seem almost unreal. And our challenge is never to become numb.
To help combat the issue, Youngkin signed a bill sponsored by Republican Senator Mark Obenchain, Democratic Senator Jennifer Boisco, and a handful of other co-sponsors. The new law raises the penalty for adulterating drugs, makes possession of pill presses a criminal offense, and creates a 10-year mandatory minimum for manufacturing any substance that includes fentanyl in the presence of a minor. Obenchain and his Shenandoah Valley district are no stranger to the fentanyl crisis. Just last week, a man was arrested for selling a lace pill to someone who overdosed but survived. The senator said the incident took place about 20 miles from his house, but he hoped the new law would stop similar acts in the future.
This is a small step in the direction of getting something meaningful done and making a meaningful dent in the human toll that this takes every year, so I hope we can build on it.
The pill press bill was not the only fentanyl-related piece of legislation to pass this year.
The General Assembly passed a bill protecting access to contraceptives. It is still awaiting Youngkin's signature to become law. Brad has more.
After U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas suggested the right to access contraception had no basis in the U.S. Constitution, advocates and lawmakers worked fast in Virginia.
No one seeking condoms, the pill, or IUDs should have the government interfering with this very private decision.
That's Henrico County Delegate Destiny Levere Bowling. She joined members of Red, Wine, and Blue, a group of women seeking to protect reproductive choice, in asking Governor Glenn Youngkin to sign a bill that would ensure contraceptive access if the High Court ever reversed their earlier ruling. Red, Wine, and Blue collected over 37,000 signatures from Virginians to show how much support the issue has. But the governor's amendment to another bill dealing with the ability of health insurers to deny contraception coverage may telegraph his disinterest in the matter. Senator Ghazala Hashmi, who authored the Senate version of the Contraception Protection Bill, had a warning for Youngkin if he did veto the effort.
I would like a full and clear explanation from the governor as to why he would stand in opposition to a simple and straightforward right to contraception. But if he does go down that path, absolutely, we will bring this bill back next year.
Youngkin has until Monday to act on the bill. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The governor has set a record for vetoing more bills than any other governor in recent years. One bill would have encouraged teaching climate change in public schools. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
Governor Glenn Youngkin is saying no thank you to a bill that would have expanded availability of instructional materials about climate change in public schools. The governor says the bill is redundant because schools already teach about climate change and that buying new materials would be an unfunded mandate. Here's Glenn Branch at the National Center for Science Education.
It's not redundant, and it was something that was needed given the lackluster treatment of climate change in the state science standards.
The veto message is also not resonating with Tim Sawinski at the Sierra Club.
His claims as to why the veto is necessary don't hold up to scrutiny. Not only is this something we pass all the time to make improvements and tune-ups to the curriculums, but this policy was just designed so that localities could opt in. No one's forcing localities to teach a certain way.
In the next week, the governor will also be responding to an effort by Democrats to restore funding for Virginia to be part of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a multi-state group the governor wants to leave. Michael Pope.
Well, finally today, Monday, is the deadline for the governor to act on the remaining bills from this year's General Assembly session. Jeff Shapiro, political columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
Governor Glenn Youngkin is issuing so many vetoes that I understand he's breaking records. Jeff Shapiro, does Governor Glenn Youngkin have the most number of vetoes of any governor in recent memory?
Oh, he is setting a record, it seems, every time he issues vetoes. Heading into the weekend, or at week's end, he was at about 132, and that number is likely to climb. There were four earlier this week, all Democratic bills, including one addressing climate change. The governor is in the final hours of bill review. He has to complete this process by midnight Monday the 8th. The governor is acting on bills sent him during the winter session of the General Assembly. He can veto them, he can sign them, or he can recommend changes. Vetoes and revisions would be considered when the legislature returns for that one-day session on April 17th. And again, the big one for which we are waiting is that two-year, $188 billion budget.
I also want to ask you on the fallout of the failure of the Glenn Dome. So where I live in Alexandria, there is a widespread belief that the city got used by a rich guy to make him more rich. Is that what happened?
That certainly seems to be the view of some, certainly at your end of Interstate 95. I've got to wonder, does a guy like Ted Leonsos, even with very deep pockets, risk a black eye or two or three as well as embarrassments for his assets, those teams, simply to leverage all of that into a $500 million deal with the District of Columbia to remain in the District of Columbia.
And then returning to Richmond politics, the governor is taking aim at diversity and equity yet again. What's the latest there?
Yes, the administration is rummaging through the course outlines for DEI courses, diversity, equity, and inclusion courses at Virginia Commonwealth University and also at George Mason University. And of course, a lot of Democrats are wondering, is this just more politics in the classroom? Also, there are some questions being raised about whether this could risk accreditation problems for these universities, that there would be needless political meddling by a governor. Black legislative leaders, including House Speaker Don Scott, say the governor's intervention, this latest racial play, if you will, could make it even more difficult to find common ground on the state budget.
And then finally, incumbent U.S. Senator Tim Kaine is launching his campaign for a third term. There are eight Republicans hoping to run against him. And I'm wondering about what that campaign looks like, and are the politics of the Middle East going to factor into it?
Well, clearly at the initial Kane announcement here in Richmond earlier this week, that was evident. The senator's remarks were interrupted several times by pro-Palestinian protesters. Of course, Kane, a strong supporter of Israel, sits on the Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committee. One would know there was a very good crowd out for this announcement, 200 plus people, you know, and the announcement was somewhat anticlimactic, running for a third term. But one of the things that Kane keeps emphasizing is that he wants to run strongly in Virginia, not only to help Joe Biden against Donald Trump, who is unlikely to carry Virginia, but more to the point, help those congressional candidates, particularly the two open seats in Northern Virginia that the Democrats want to hold, and one down on the seacoast that Democrats would like to flip.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
See you then.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.